All right, welcome to the Productivityist podcast. I am Mike Vardy of Productivityist, and with me this week is Paul Jarvis.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Now, Paul, you've got your own podcast. Is season two started yet?
No, season two starts in January. We set it up kind of like a TV show so we can have long breaks in between, which is good.
So you take like five breaks during the seasons that they do now. Like, I think it's the way TV shows used to work. Now it's like, you know, okay, it's time for the mid-season break and then the mid-season break.
Exactly. That's actually why I like Walking Dead, because it just kind of, they play all the episodes back to back to back to back. It's a short season, but you get it all in like 10, 12 weeks. That's kind of how our podcast works, Invisible Office Hours, is it runs every single week until the season's done, then stops for a few months. Then people forget about us, then maybe some people will listen to the next one.
Now, as for Walking Dead, by the way, I've never watched. Not a single episode.
Ooh, zombies.
I know. A lot of people are like, I know a lot of people basically have said, you know, hey, this is this is something you got to watch. But no, I just haven't been able to get into it. Same with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Another one. But anyway, we don't want to talk about TV. I want to talk a little bit about, first off, for those who don't know you, I mean, you're a writer, you're a web designer, you're creative. Would that be the best way to put it? You know,
I also teach classes now on the interweb.
Yeah. What's the new course? You've got the new course out there now, right?
The new course is for freelancers to do better at freelancing. It's called the Creative Class, and it's thecreativeclass.io.
Right. Gotcha. So I want to talk a bit about, we basically have coffee, what, like once a month now at this point? We kind of
pretty much, it's a standing mandate.
Yeah, we have a standing mandate. Because most people don't realize, and we've talked about, I know we've talked about this before, but that where we live, there's not a lot of people that like kind of can fly under the radar in our town, but then on the internet, you know, we do a lot more stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I want to talk about where you're at in terms of your growth and your career and stuff like that, because as of late, I've been really spending time trying to build Productivityist up, and it's, you know, like I'm going through the incorporation process right now, which you've done, right? Like you're a full on company,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you've done this, and I want to kind of dive into the importance of getting, this is like a different kind of front end work, right? Like this is the stuff that most people are just like, yeah, I'll get to it later. When did you realize that you kind of said, oh, you know what, this thing is, and not just for the web design stuff, because I know you've been doing that for a while, but like, and you're a musician too. So you've got a lot of hats. Like, when did you kind of say, you know what, I need to sit back and say, okay, let's get this set up in a way that I can continue to do the thing I love to do without worrying about, you know, admin all over the place.
Yeah, I sound old. It was in the 90s. I incorporated in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that was basically, I talked to I think it was 99. It wasn't like 91 or anything when I was in high school, but it was, I think, 99. But yeah, so basically some money person told me that it's better, especially in Canada, I don't know about in the States, but if you're making over 50K a year, it makes sense to incorporate. And then as well, if you deal mostly with out-of-country contracts, which I know you're going through as well, it's better to incorporate because you can separate your business and your personal finances and expenses, but as well, your business now becomes its own entity, which sounds weird. It seems weird, right? Like your business is kind of a person as far as the government goes, which just kind of talks to how weird the government is and how screwed up that is. But it's also good, like if I get sued, it would be my company that gets sued. And it would be my company that's on the line, not just me personally. And especially when I'm dealing with cross-border clients, all my clients are American. It's just easier. And as well, there are a bit of tax breaks when you're incorporated and you start to make decent money. If you keep the money in your company, it works out a lot better because basically I pay myself as little as possible. So my personal taxes are low. I invest all of my money in my corporation so I get to make money off of interest and stuff. And then it works out, my accountant at least says, it works out that I end up being able to keep more of my money and not having to give it to the government.
Right. Now, and you decided to do this a long time ago. Like this was something that you said, you know, I want this stuff out of the way so I could focus on, you know, my art, my craft, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think I did about a year of just being a sole proprietor. And then I figured, yeah, I need to get this sorted out. And then I don't want to deal with it anymore. Like basically all of the systems in my business I set up. So all I have to worry about is making my clients happy and doing work. Everything else, I as automated as I can make it, or as much as I can push it off to bookkeepers, accountants, lawyers, any of that, it does cost money. But I'm better at making money than I am at managing those kind of systems. So I'd rather focus on the doing the work, making the money, and get those other people to do it. And it doesn't end up costing that much either.
Right, right. Now that you've got all that out of the way, and I want to talk a little bit about this because this is something I did this past week. The reason we're talking about this is that I know one of the reasons, as you said, that I'm doing a lot of business stateside, which I do, is that I was supposed to go away to the U.S. at the beginning of last week, but that didn't happen, mainly because of just the way that things were lined up. It just didn't work out. And so I had 2 days that I could have just, you know, made myself available to coaching clients and stuff. But I decided, you know what? No, I'm going to take these 2 days and just map out my next year because I need to do that. How early in advance do you kind of say, you know, I want to know what next year is going to look like? When do you start doing that?
I have to plan pretty far in advance just because I'm like for web design, I'm booked 5-6 months in advance. So I know my life that far in advance. And then typically the way that I kind of work it is I know how much I need to make in a 12-month period. My year end starts and finishes on September 30th. So it's not the same as most tax seasons that end in April. But so I basically figure out how much I need to make that year. And then I book web design enough to cover most of it. And then so I'll do 6 months of web design for clients. I can book that pretty much in a few weeks for the entire year. And then the rest of the year, I focus on writing books, making courses, hanging out.
How many products do you build a year, would you say? Or like how many did you start now? And what's the, like, where do you think it's going to be like, okay, and then this is the max I'll do?
Yeah, right now it's two, and I was doing one a year for a while. And the way that I kind of worked it out is I kept my income streams completely separate. So when I started writing, I figured, okay, I want to see if I can make a go at writing and make money doing it. So all the money that I made from books and writing gigs and that sort of stuff, I kept separate in a spreadsheet from my design. So I could see, okay, I'm making more money doing writing. I can scale back design. So in the beginning, I was only doing maybe a month off a year of web design clients so I could focus on writing. Now I'm kind of like 50-50. I mean, like 6 months of web design, 6 months of writing and courses, which has allowed me to get two products out this year. I launched The Good Creative, a book and audio book earlier this year. And then I launched my course, The Creative Class, a couple weeks ago.
And when's the next big project that you've probably already slated 2015 already in terms of the two that you really want to work on?
Well, I got another course coming out with Jason Surfer App on writing books. But then the next six, I'm getting into the web design cycle. Yeah. So I've got about 6 months of web design and I haven't figured out what I want to do next. And for products and that, I tend to figure them out better when it's happening. Like as soon as I finish my last web design client, then I can kind of think about it. Because otherwise, if I thought about it now, I might have a great idea. And then 6 months from now, I think like, wah, wah.
Yeah, no, it's sucks. True. It's like that idea of, you know, Stephen King saying, you know, you write the novel and you put it in a drawer for 3 months and you come back to it. And it's either, you know, you have a whole different perspective with which to look at it through, right?
Yeah.
You're working with Jason now, so you're doing some collaborative stuff. Is that going to change the way that you develop stuff? I mean, I'm working with some people as well. And I think that the temptation is to go, well, if I'm working with somebody else, then I can make more things now because I'm only doing, you know, half the work. But I think that that's a fallacy.
Yeah, it ends up being just as involved because a lot of times, like when I don't really work well with other people. Jason is an anomaly there because him and I work really well. But the reason
we actually tend to throw coffee at each other by the time we're done our mandates, and then we just
Exactly. There's like stomping and tantrums and all that sort of stuff.
I'm not going to hang out with you again. See you next week. Yeah, see you next week.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when partnerships really work with business is when both parties are very different. So what Jason brings to the table is so different than what I bring to the table. We both end up working the same amount, but the end result is like twice as good. So I still have to put in the same amount of work, but the end result of the product is so much better because it's got two brains instead of one. Right. Or in our case, it's like 0.75 each. So we get a 1.5 brain instead of one brain.
Now you're still doing the music, right? You still dabble in that?
Yeah, not as much. And even with the music thing, we ended up starting our own record label for the band. so we could keep all the books straight. And so all we needed to focus on was the music, recording and touring and that sort of thing. So even in that side of things, most bands don't start a record label to deal with the business side of things or the accounting side of things. But we did, and it ended up working out a lot better for us because we could keep track of stuff a lot more easily.
Now, you are essentially, and I'm not going to say one-man operation, but I mean, you've got, I mean, again, starting a record label instead of saying, hey, you know what, let's bust our asses and get signed. You know, the good creative, let's write this book or a book proposal and send it off to publishers and see if I can get published. You're at a point now where you probably could. Why did you make that choice before? And you mean, you've written a bunch of stuff before it was really the new hotness to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, for the band, we turned down, I think, 3 record deals just because the bandmates and I, it's my wife and I that basically run the band, we both know contracts. Mm-hmm. And record label contracts sucks. We were like, we can do this better. Same with books. I talked to quite a few book publishers that were like, oh, we're really good. We pay our artists really well. It's like, how much? It's like 12%. So yeah. I don't know. I would rather just give myself permission to do whatever I want than to wait and try to get permission from somebody else, from the record industry or from the book publishing industry or from anybody else. I have more fun when I get to call the shots and when I get to do things the way that I want to do them. So I've just always liked that. And then I can do things like run contests where I give away adopted llamas. And like, no book publisher would let me do that. But I can, so I do.
Well, and the other thing is, it does. I mean, there's the one of the things I was talking to somebody about is like, well, if you get a book deal, then you'll have, you know, there's a cachet attached to it. And I said, yeah, there is. And believe me, I mean, there's if a book deal came my way, I'd look at it. I've been published through a publisher before, but there's that freedom. And again, I mean, as we're talking about this, I mean, I released my little mini book, a 23 essay book, and I just decided I'm going to put it out there, and I could price it the way I wanted, and I could deliver it the way I wanted, and I didn't even deliver it to much fanfare. And to see number one next to it was great. I didn't need a publisher to do that. Now, that may help me get a publisher later if I really want, right? And I think that's worth noting. But
yeah, but and a lot of times these people come to you and you don't need them.
Yes, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You don't. You're never going to get a record deal unless you're doing so well that record companies take notice. And that same with book publishers.
They want a piece of the pie. They want, you know, and that's, I mean, it's funny. One of the things that I thought about during this whole process of incorporation and going down to the States and all that is like, oh, well, you know, if I get a book deal, the publisher will sponsor all that stuff. I can go to book tours. You can do book tours in the U.S. even if you're Canadian. You just aren't getting paid, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. You're a visitor. But I don't want to necessarily and this may hurt any chances of a publishing deal, but I don't really care. I don't necessarily want to go to every single city that's on a book tour. That I want to pick those dates. Do you know what I mean? And I want to pick those places. And you're giving up control. And when you give up control to certain things, you also are giving up some of the awareness and some of the you're actually handing over some of the importance and creating more urgency around things, which can actually lead, and this leads back to like productivity to a certain extent. It actually can impact your productivity because all of a sudden you're letting somebody else in that has other interests or other ideas in mind that may not be totally aligned with yours.
Exactly. And they could get you to do work that may not be of your best interest. Like even like talking to some publishers, and I can say this because I don't give a shit about getting a publishing deal. I felt like I should have been charging for consulting when I was talking to these publishers because they just didn't know how to put books out now. And I know people that have like top like big 5 publishing deals where their books don't do anything because they're thinking their publisher's going to promote it. The publisher's telling them like, you got to promote this, and everybody's throwing their hands up like, I don't know what to do. Same with record deals. Like, you can sign a record deal and get shelved. Yep. Like indefinitely, and they own that. They own your album, or they own your ability to like record music, and you just get shelved because it's not the right time for the market. So your band basically gets thrown in the toilet.
Well, that's just it. Like right now, NaNoWriMo's going on, and I'm working on the follow-up to The Front Nine as part of it, just because there's a framework there that can kind of let me do it. And I finally, and again, that Monday and Tuesday I took off last week to sit back and go, okay, what do I want to do? And the book that I was going to write is not the book I'm writing now. It completely changed because I took a step back. And but the thing is that if I was to get a publishing deal for it, and I'm not saying that it's not on the table, I'm just saying if I was, I don't get to decide when that book comes out. So exactly. If I wanted to release it before the end of the year, like January, when people are going to need it, I can do that on my own if I have all my ducks in a row. But if I go through a publisher, it's not coming out till 2016. And by then, somebody else could have written a book that comes along and answers the same questions or provides solutions that I'm trying to offer. It may not be worth it. Plus, and this is, again, getting into licensing and all that stuff, what if I want to make it more than the book? What if you wanted to take the good creative, like you've done the good creative, and you've got the creative class? And I mean, what if you want to branch out? If you basically sell that to a publisher or what have you, it's theirs. You can't say, well, you know what, I want to make a workbook, or I want to do a conference associated with it. Oh, no, we own the rights to that. What do you mean you own the rights? You know, I mean, so you have to be very, very careful. And the reason all these questions are coming up for me right now is that, I'm putting my big boy pants on now more than ever before because, you know, I mean, the business has grown. And I think that a lot of people, they kind of just let the things happen to them. And you need to kind of say, whoa, like you need to put, you know, put the brakes on a bit and go, okay, I want to future-proof things a bit right now. And now is the time, I mean, because, you know, we're heading into holiday season, we're heading into busy time. I mean, we're already going to be overwhelmed enough with a lot of the other stuff that's going on, year-end, all that. Why not, like, just say, okay, you know what, if this stuff's happening, let's start future-proofing. We're going into a new year anyway, so let's start future-proofing for the year ahead, which is why, you know, I have a meeting with the accountant and a meeting with a lawyer and all that now. And then, you know, it was funny. They were talking about year end. My account's like, well, when do you want the year end to be? I'm like, end of August. He's like, well, September's not. I'm like, September is a good time of year for people to start asking for productivity stuff because historically school starts. It becomes a first of the year for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
In the summer, I don't do any major projects anyway. So I have June and July or July and August to basically like wrap up the year. So but all that takes is the wherewithal and the awareness to step back and go, all right, where do I want this to go? And how do I make sure that I can have as much control over it as possible? Because that's the thing, that when you give up control, then you're giving up more than what you think initially with stuff like this.
Exactly. And that's kind of the way that business, there's always the business person trying to trade an artist or a creative, either money or exposure, for control. And it's always a, is this worth it or not? And does this align with the reason why you started whatever you're doing in the first place? Does this still line up? Like, if it's just to make money, then whatever you need to do to make that money, go for it. If it's more than that, which for a lot of creative people, it is actually more than that, then maybe it is like selling yourself short if you take like a short-term gain instead of thinking long term. I mean, I've always thought long, because I've been doing this for almost 20 years, like I'm kind of playing the long game, whereas a lot of people are just getting into freelancing or working for themselves and it's a couple months and they can see like, oh, if I just do this one little thing, then I'll be this much farther ahead. But then it could screw you over with your audience or with something else, like a year down the line or 2 years down the line. And that's why having especially the business system set up as soon as possible makes the most sense, because then you're, like you said, future-proofing the way that things work.
But yeah, that's just it. And your company lives beyond you anyways. Like you said, it's an entity. I mean, mm-hmm. The reason you incorporate is so that you have, it's almost like a legacy to a certain extent. And the question is, what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind? Do you want to leave behind a and it's funny, one of the creatives I've talked to, I have a lot of screenwriter friends from back when I worked in, you know, the comedy spec and all that stuff. Same thing with joke writers. I mean, they still find a way to make money doing that thing, but there's the art they won't let go of. Like, so for example, let's talk about like screenwriters. I know lots of screenwriters that write scripts that they know will never get made into movies, but they'll get optioned. When they get optioned, they get paid, and they'll sit there for years, and then the movie won't get made, and then it'll revert back to the author, and then the screenwriter will shop it around again, and boom, it'll sell again. And that's, there are screenwriters that make a living doing just that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that there are some that do make a living doing just that, and that's what they do to support themselves, but then they're working on their seminal work or their big project that they really want to make sure that they maybe they're writing their novel. Stephen Pressfield is a great example. Pressfield was a screenwriter, and he turned into a novelist, and the novels that he's written Legend of Bagger Vance, he's written a bunch of like historical works, but what do we know him probably best for? The War of Art, right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which is totally a departure from what he initially was known for. So was that the thing he really wanted to do? I don't know. Did he want to just sell more books and make money, and nonfiction seemed like a place he could do it in? Possibly. I mean, Twyla Tharp's The Creative Habit. Twyla's a dancer. You know, yeah. I mean, but there are some definite lessons in that book that you could apply across the board. So I think that, yeah, I mean, you get to a point where why are we doing all of the, I guess, why are you putting the systems in place in the first place? Like, why are you setting up a task manager? Why are you setting up the books? What, first off, like, should you? Yes. Well, what should you? Okay, great. Now, why? Well, I'm doing it because I want to make money. Well, then, you know, there's lots of things you could do. I'm doing it to support my craft, support my art. Okay, well, then you're going to want to make sure that you have other things lined up, like, you know, your web design, for example, for you, and grow mm-hmm. that. Or you're going to do some freelance writing or some ghost writing like I did for a number of years so that you can build that business on the side. Because like you said, you do I do the every 8 weeks. I'm taking a week off to just do professional development work. You take 6 months, do all your web work, and then you're done.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to, especially I've seen this, I feel like old man internet, like the younger generation.
That's the name of the episode, by the way. The name of the episode is now called Old Man Internet with Paul Jarvis.
Old man internet. Yeah, I see so many people that feel like they're entitled to just do work that they love. And I look at myself, like there's so many times where I do work because it pays well.
Yep.
And that's fine. And a lot of it is just, it's not like I'm vegan, so I'm not going to do like a site for a butcher, or I'm environmental, so I'm not going to do like an oil and gas website, but some other stuff, like I'll just take on because it's good money. I like the people, I like doing the work, and I don't feel like I'm better than any of these jobs. And then it opens me up to be able to do the stuff that I actually really want to do. And where I can actually build like new products or new books or new courses or that sort of thing. So I've always just kind of taken on work because sometimes it's good money. Sometimes it's just things that pay the bills. And I have absolutely no problem with that. I don't feel like it's beneath me to take on projects like that.
Well, and the thing is, you're also fostering the other side, which makes it more worthwhile to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like a lot of people will be like, you know, they do the thing they don't want to do, and they do more of that thing than the thing that they want to do. And that's when things get out of whack. You balanced it quite nicely.
Just enough.
Yeah. You do. I mean, there are things where, and it's funny, we were talking about this, you know, when you're setting up a corporation, it's like, you know, okay, well, there's share classes and all that. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. You know, I'm going to look into this, obviously. But there, you get to a point where, I mean, we've always lived fairly modestly, my family. You know, I mean, we started out when I was doing this, you know, I wasn't making much money. I'm making more now, but we don't live, I think you have to, if you want to support the work you love and you want to be able to continue to do it, then you make sure that you put systems in place that allows you to, and that would include your lifestyle. Like, hey, I'm not going to go out and eat dinner every night at a restaurant. I'm going to, you know, we're going to grow food in our yard. Like you have to set up protocols so that you think, like you said, long tail, you future proof it so that at the end of the day, you're like, all right, you know what? We made, you know, X amount of dollars per year, and the company's got a lot more money there. So the company will continue. Oh, we need to have a bit more money this year. We want to go. Okay, fine. We, you know, there you go. Here's a bonus for all the hard work you put in. So that's what that's built for. And that's why it really frustrates me when people say, you know, I don't understand how you can do what you do. And it's not because of the thing I do. It's because of how do I manage to live and I'm like, well, we don't, you know, we have a 2002 Ford Focus.
Exactly.
We had a renter in our basement for 10 years. You know, yeah. I mean, you do things that you need to do in order to be able to live the way you want to live. And I could tell you, my wife and I've had this conversation many times. If I was still at Costco, as much as I love the company, it wasn't for me by the time I left, we wouldn't be together, you know, because I was not a fun person to be around. I was making more money back then. Yeah. I've evened out now, but I was making more money, but it wasn't the right fit. And the right fit is what you need in order to do the right thing.
Exactly. And I think there's kind of a misconception on the internet, like all these people that whose names other people have heard of, like, oh, they must be like making gazillions of dollars and driving their like Tesla roadsters and stuff like that. And like, we all live pretty modest lives. Like, we don't do that much. We don't have like crazy houses or like fancy cars. We just live within our means because it means we get to keep doing more of what we love to do.
Yeah, exactly. And we get to do it on our terms. And that's exactly. The thing is that most people, if you can live and work on your terms, that's a sweet spot that a lot of people, and it's more achievable than you think, mm-hmm. you know, but you have to put something in place, whether it's, you know, the framework of a business model, the framework of a task management model, project, whatever, or all those things combined. But you need to have that workflow there so that you can say, okay, you know what do I do next so that I can do the thing I really want to do?
Yeah, Chris Brogan has his monthly oh shit number, yep. where he knows he needs to make a certain amount of money to cover like mortgage and putting his kids through school and all of that. And then anything past that, he can work on the things he wants. But until then, he's hustling like a dog. And a lot of us kind of do the same, where it's like, we know what we need to make to live our modest lives. Mm-hmm. And then past that, we can experiment a bit more. And that's really what, like, when I take 6 months off a year, it's not like I'm not taking 6 months off to sit on a beach. I'm taking 6 months off to work on new things that could make me money, but I'm not 100% sure they will. So I experiment with them.
Yeah. You need the time. Again, what's that? I mean, I've talked about this a number of times, and I think you and I have even chatted that John Cleese adage, you know, in order to be truly creative, you need two things, time and space.
Yeah,
that exactly. 6 months is a lot of time and space because it gives you the chance to really experiment and develop and iterate. Whereas if you're just trying to push stuff out the door as quickly as possible, you know that the quality is not going to be as refined as something that you get to foster and develop over an extended period of time, because your brain gets the opportunity to, you know, realize its fullest potential because you're giving it that space. You're giving it that time.
Exactly. And you can spend more time focusing mm-hmm, mm-hmm. on each of the things you're doing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Paul, I'm going to let you go. We went on. Cool. This is great, though. Where can people find you on the internet when you're not hanging out with me, having coffee, occasionally throwing coffee at me, which is, exactly. again, that's we should get that. We'll do a Vine of that at some point, I'm sure.
Nice. I am PJRVS on the Twitter and PJRVS.com, and more easily just search Paul Jarvis on Google. The first page is me and some cricketer. I'm not the cricketer.
Yeah, I'm the, for me, it's me and then a British director. Those are nice. The two. I think we each have our own other person on the internet that has their own thing that they do that they're known for. Thanks everybody for listening this week. Paul, thanks for taking the time and I'll see you. I guess I'll see you in a couple of weeks at the coffee shop.
Exactly.
Take care, buddy.
Cheers, man.